Sir Herbert Thompson won.
Of course, all flying in the First War was a lonely job, even if you went up in a two-seater. And incidentally, I never went up in anything except a single seat or a two-seater. Because there was no communication with the ground, whatever, except sight. And even if they wanted to get hold of you, on one occasion, I had completely unaware of the fact that a wheel had been shot off. And I gathered afterwards that everybody available almost on the aerodrome was waving wheels and so on at me, and I had not the slightest idea, nobody could tell you. But the loneliness, of course, only is realizable after you've graduated and you're entitled to go always alone. And I never had a passenger, I never flew a two-seater until I returned to instruct at East Church. So I was always up alone. And gradually it sort of dawned on one as perhaps the tension grew and the tiredness grew, how utterly alone you were, how independent. Once you left the ground, no power on earth could bring you down again except yourself. And even when you got on the ground, you had to do what you could in an emergency. I remember once that I had a forced landing on a pup when I was in number 11 squadron. And I misjudged, it was only the first time I'd ever flown a pup. I misjudged her gliding power. And she would not sit on the ground. And the more you try to sit on the ground, the faster she went. No brakes. There I was proceeding across a field, straight for a hedge with a tree in it, and there was nothing I could do. She stopped just touching it. It was a sort of thing. But developing on, I think what really was the wearing part, that when you went up as we did in a lot of what we call special missions, you were sent out to shoot down a bomber, a spotter, invariably was. It might be a reconnaissance with the idea of bombing later, but for some reason or other, we did these round-the-clock special missions. And we suddenly had to take a decision when you saw another aeroplane, it was a German. First of all, you had to decide whether it was a German, and then you felt rather lonely, and you decided it was a German, and it was your business to attack. And it was the most extraordinary feeling, I think, of utter defenselessness, curiously enough, because your only defense was attack. You had to decide when to make your thrust. And the curious thing was, the great relief was when the guns started firing. You forgot all fear, everything. I was always inclined to open fire too soon, which is exactly the same thing as you're liable to do years later, when I learned to shoot really big game, to reserve your fire till you're, but you had to be quite certain you were going to kill the beast. And it was the reason why we felt so lonely, that, as I said, there was no wireless. Even the two-seater spotting had only got the Morse key to play with. There was nobody could rescue you. You had to decide what to do to save yourself if something was going wrong. And it developed the most extraordinary sensitivity, that even to this day I listen to the sound of a motor car engine when I'm driving. You listen to the sound of particularly a gnome engine, because the slightest tumble in that might result in a missing cylinder, explosive gas would be ignited, and the first thing you'd see was a flash back into the aeroplane. And as we only consisted of matchsticks and doped canvas, could be extremely unpleasant. I saw once in my own squadron the sort of called Bray, and I was watching him on patrol from the ground, and he was the backseat member of a flight of five, and a German came up behind him, which he never noticed, and he was in flames of what he would say in life.
Did you feel more companionship if you were flying in a formation?
Yes. Although they couldn't help. And I remember roaring with laughter once. I was alongside a fellow called Jordan, and the Marchie blew up between us, and I saw him start, and his elevator he put an angle of 30 degrees on it. Started to pull his leg afterwards. So he was a very brave man, a very fine pilot, and was running around a good shot in various directions, but it was rather fun to see somebody else could suffer from nerves.
I believe that for a considerable part of your time in the Royal Naval Air Service, you flew the Sopwith triplane. What was this famous aircraft like to fly?
Well, to me, it was at once my favourite aeroplane, and remained the whole time. It was of absolute beauty. She really was, of course, a glider with an engine in it, but she had no bad manners. Unlike the Camel, for some reason or other, the torque of the engine twisted her, and she'd always turn to the right more under control than to the left. The left, if you turned to the left, you had to watch that you didn't get into a steeper turn than you wanted, and so on. And triplane was in every atom of her control smooth, but of course you realise that you mustn't play any tricks with her, because I think I'm right. The safety factor was only 3.5. There was only one set of flying wires, for instance, and they didn't even connect with the middle plane. And I have seen, just managed to notice when I was diving very hard, you could see the strain on the centre section. You could see almost a curve on it. But allowing for that, and why not, allowing for the fact that she was by no means as strong as, for instance, the SE-5, you would sit back and enjoy flying her. And she was so delightful that I remember one shocking occasion when it was very hot, and there was a ground haze which climbs up with you the whole time you're climbing. The horizon is always level with you. I was coming home from a very high patrol, which we'd broken off really high up, something about 17,000 or 18,000. And then the trouble was to get this old Sopwith triplane down to the ground without a strain. You could always spin, for instance, in a new point, you spun down, but never, never, never with a triplane, nor even with a Camel. And believe it or not, I went to sleep. Only momentary, and to my horror, where I suddenly realised I couldn't recognise the ground below me. And it was really the culprit was the manners of the triplane. She was so beautiful. I know that when we swapped over to Camels, and my flight was the last one to be equipped, I was in C flight, and A flight got the first five naturally, and B flight the next five. And I tried out a Camel before I went up, and I was really heartbroken at leaving my triplane. And I only flew once nostalgically at Eastchurch. I went up in one, and she was still the most glorious thing to fly. I suppose in a way it was just emotional, that you, it was such a beautiful thing, you fell in love with it.
Was she a very stable aircraft?
Oh, that galaxy of Sopwiths, the 1.5 Strutter, the Pup, the Triplane and the Camel, and I didn't go beyond that, I never got to the Snipe. They were astonishingly stable for those days. And three of them you could fly hands off with care. The Camel, I never dared to fly her hands off. I found actually the Camel, there are a lot of bad things said about her, that they're all saying she's pun or something, nonsense. Aeroplanes very often got bad names for no reason at all. There was a story that the B-2C, that she would get into an uncontrollable spin and you were killed. When I was instructing on a B-2C, I determined to see about this thing. It took me an enormous effort to persuade the B-2C to get into a spin, and the moment the right thing, she came out of it. That's all I know. I have never spun a triplane. That was deliberate. I've spun a Camel, but it's the lightest control. That light hands were well known. Some people automatically inclined to be ham-handed. Even the great Bob Little. In number 8 squadron, and he was credited with a net, a total of 47 Huns brought down. He was the most ham-handed pilot, and it was always a joke that he'd written off more English aeroplanes than he'd written off Germans. That was usually landing, but flying behind him, he was absolutely ruthless the way he dived. It was extremely hard to keep up with him.
What was the particular advantage of the Camel if she was introduced after the triplane?
Oh, because she was more manoeuvrable with safety. She was much stronger. And being a biplane, you could turn them in a narrower circle quickly. There's the feeling, and I've actually seen it done, there was a feeling, pull the wings off a triplane. I can't remember the man's name, he did it in number 8 squadron. And of course the Camel was able to mount two guns and the triplane only one, because you couldn't have carried two on the triplane, you'd have lost her. She'd have been reduced to the level of a Camel in climb.
She was a good climber.
She was a superb climber. That story that I had to tell you, that when three of us were up, led by Booker, and we were way over near the Valenciennes, and we were coming back off patrol and coming home, but out of Archie range, about 17,000, and we saw a batch of the travelling circus between us and home and the sun. It was impossible with three triplanes to take on about nine albatrosses. And so Booker simply sat in his tail and we went over the top of them. We crossed them at about 20,000 feet and they couldn't get there. So we get home safely. They did try to fire at us, but they toppled over every time anybody pulled his nose up, stalled. It was really wonderful. But that, I suppose, the beginning of the reason, undoubtedly, was that the Camel was able to mount its two guns with a magnificent fuel load of, what do you call it, magazine. There were 300 rounds in one gun and 250 in the other. And on a very cold day where you had to fire your guns in order to keep them from freezing up, there was one fellow discovered that when the fight began, that he'd used all but about 5 rounds of his ammunition, keeping them warm. Because it's ridiculous to think a gun, a machine gun with only 250 rounds in it, you poop off 10 as soon as you put them, as soon as you pull the trigger.
How many rounds would a rough estimate be needed to bring down the aircraft? Would they need to be riddled, or was it usually a providential
shot? No, the lucky shot.
The pilot.
As a rule, it was there. And the astonishing thing is that I remember that when damage was done to me, that to my ear it sounded like 20 to 25 shots, but only one hit me. And that happened to be lucky shots, and it might have been extremely dangerous, but it severed the main spar of the top plane of my triplane, and also hit a control wire doing it. There's only one. The vulnerable course was to get it into the tank, and the tracer. As far as I remember, we put one tracer in 5, I think, or maybe in 4, and that got into the tank, and the tanks were unarmored. Would very probably exploded, and that's certainly what brought Bray down, because it went up absolutely block. In fact, I can't understand how they missed you, because in a Camel, the tank was behind you and you were sitting up against it. So they would naturally fire at the pilot, the middle of the aeroplane,